Bromance. This is a very interesting passage. I don't know if I ever told you guys this, but apparently my mom tells me that my dad's a pastor. And ever since I was a little kid, the church people would be like, "Hey, so what are you going to be when I grow up?" And ever since I was a little kid, I would say pastor. Okay, and that never changed. My mom thought that was pretty entertaining. Especially because my brother, his vocational hopes changed like every 5 minutes. So they'd be like, "Peter, what do you want to be?" He was like, he'd be like, "I want to be an animal trainer." And then like, "I want to be a fireman. I want to be a policeman. I want to do this." Okay. So the last couple of years he's been stuck on rapper. Okay. But you never know, because my brother just changes every day. So, you know, that'd be kind of funny. I ask him, you know, "What are you going to be when you grow up?" You know, it's like, because you're already grown up. Anyway, me, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I had this, you know, desire to be a pastor. And I don't know, there's a lot of theories in my head on why that is. Maybe it's because I just had too much fun in youth group. Thinking back in high school days, I don't really remember stuff from school. I remember mostly stuff from youth group. The stuff that we did, the good, the bad, the ugly. The illegal, the semi-legal, okay? In any case, I remember one day I went to the bookstore because my mom said I had to go get a SAT book, right? Everyone understand, you know what I'm talking about, right? Was it eight SAT practice exams? Well, I got the one that was at 10 for the price of 8 or something, you know? My mom's like, you know, my mom never, God bless her heart, never told me, "You gotta be a doctor, you gotta get straight A's," right? But then the summer before my senior year, she said, "Son, I'm not trying to tell you that you gotta make a lot of money or get straight A's, but you shouldn't fail your SATs." I said, "That's fair, okay?" So I went to the bookstore, and I was supposed to be looking for SAT books, but I didn't. I went to the Bible section just to see what they got. And I remember this little book, it said, "Homosexuality in the Bible." And I said, and I picked it up because I thought it would be like, it's bad. You know, homosexuality is bad. The Bible says it's bad, therefore it's bad. But it wasn't. It was like, oh, homosexuality is good. It's normal. It's okay. And here are some examples. And one of the examples they had was this passage, Jonathan and David. And what they were arguing was, they were like, "Look at how, you know, it says Jonathan loved David. Obviously, it's two dudes. What it's saying is, like, this author obviously never heard of bromance, okay? Like, they're never saying, this author was saying that, like, Young can't love Johnny as himself, right? Or I can't love Elliot like myself, which I don't. I'm getting there, though, okay? We're getting there, right? But Elliot loves me as he loves himself. I know this because Elliot loves me, and he tells me this, okay? In weird ways. So that's what this book was saying, okay? And it's interesting because it's what this guy was trying to do was, I don't know if it was a guy or not, but this author was trying to do is take a modern idea that homosexuality is okay, it's normal, right? And they're trying to superimpose that on everything, especially the old stuff. So what they're saying is this, they're like, you know what, homosexuality is okay. And if they can somehow prove that homosexuality was okay in ancient civilizations such as Greece and Rome, which was, you know, there was rampant homosexuality, they want to say, oh, since all those old civilizations did it, we should do it too. Okay, that's kind of their mindset, which doesn't make sense to me. But in any case, this is one of those passages in the Bible where it's come under attack, okay, by modern philosophers. However, to say that this is an example of homosexuality between Jonathan and David is, sad to say, very bad Hebrew exegesis, okay? my professor, I could see his face cringing. Okay, like you could get there, you could say David and Jonathan were gay, but like you would have to make up a lot of things that aren't there. Okay, as one pastor said, the plain things are plain things, and let's just keep it that way. Okay, the Bible says they love each other like brothers. What do you assume? Oh, they're gay. No, you assume, bromance. It's a Bible, it's a biblical idea. Okay, so bromance. So when Elliot hugs you, Hunter, it's bromance. He's trying to be a good Christian. Okay, when Jay tells people you need to be saved, that's bromance. Okay, it's a biblical thing. Okay, Jay, you should also hug them. That's like extra credit right there. Okay, extra credit, Jay evangelism. All right, anyway, there's a couple points. I have 3 points. The first one, Jonathan, David were bound in a covenant of brotherly love. Where do I get that? I get that from verse 3. Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved David as himself. Okay, now check this out. Jonathan, his name in the Hebrew means given by Yahweh. Okay, that's pretty legit, okay? Check this out. What we see here is, notice how David, this is pretty early in his life. This is even before he's king. So he has no money or anything. In fact, the only thing that we know from this passage at this point in his life is that he's given a military title. I don't know if he's a general or something yet, but he's made an officer in the military. Okay, it's not like he has any money. He doesn't really have a crew. Okay, it's really early, but notice this simple fact: it's that David, okay, the beloved of God, King David, big bad David, still is given a friend by God. Okay, check this out. What this simply means is this. You can't live your Christian life by yourself. Christian life was never designed to be lived by yourself. It's impossible. This is the reason why we should be worried about people who miss 2 Sundays in a row. Okay, not because they missed 2 Sundays, but simply because, oh my gosh, okay? Like, for example, if a person has not professed Christ, okay, and they just come and say, oh, I'm here just to have fun. I'm here because I want to be friends with Jay. I'm here because I want to be friends with Nathan, even though he's a bully. Okay, I want to figure out why he's a bully, right? Okay, if those people come and go, okay, to a certain extent, I'm like, all right, well, I don't want them to not come back. But at the same time, I'm not really worried. If a person comes, professes Christ, okay, says, yes, I believe Jesus died for my sins, and they have been baptized in front of the church. The reason why you are baptized and confirmed in front of the church as a whole is because what you're saying is publicly saying, yes, I am a Christian. Also, at the same time, you are asking the church to keep you in check. That's the reason why we have public baptism and confirmation. Otherwise, you don't really need people to be there. You know, you might as well just go into a room and just do it. Okay? So, it's a covenant of brotherly love. Now, sister, don't think that, you know, this is just about dudes. Okay? This is also, I don't know if there's like a bromance female version. I'm assuming there is. The sisterhood. The sisterhood of whatever. Okay? I don't know. Come up with a catchy title. Okay? But bromance. For me, it shows us that we're not designed to be living this Christian life alone. One of the scariest passages in the New Testament, the Apostle Peter says, be aware of the devil who prowls around like a lion. Okay? If you watch a lot of animal shows like I do, I like watching animals kill and eat each other. It's just fascinating to me. Now I can't do that because there's a little critter in my house, and Peggy says, no, we cannot show him, you know, animal violence. But when he's sleeping, then I watch it, okay? And one of the things that I find fascinating is that many people think that lions, when they, you know, go hunting, they go for, what, the young, like zebras or young ox or whatever, right? That's not always the case. Sometimes they go for strong, healthy ones, zebras or whatever you have. You know what the key is? The lions, they pick the one that strayed away from the rest. That's what they go for. They don't go for the entire herd. They go for the one that strayed away. So usually what you see is the lions going after the babies or the old ones because they can't keep up or they just got lost. But every once in a while you'll have a wildebeest or a zebra or whatever that's kind of got away and lost track of where everyone else was and got separated. And those are the ones that lions go after. I don't think it's a mistake that that God's saying, hey, Satan is like a lion, okay? And he's going around and he's looking for someone to devour, right? And so again, this is another appeal. When somebody misses, we're not supposed to go after them and attack them, but we're supposed to go after them in love, saying, hey, you need to come back to the herd. Okay? Not because of anything else other than the fact that you are very vulnerable when, as a professing Christian, you do not join in with the church in Sunday worship. Okay? It's very, very important. It's interesting that, you know, we're kind of dealing with this issue, but hey, this is what the passage says. Okay? Point number two, God's rejection of Saul. Again, this is... we're talking about, we're seeing the growth or the advancement of David, but at the same time, we're also seeing the decline of Saul. Because remember, even last week when we talked about David and Goliath, right? Saul, as the king, as the one who is the best looking, the strongest, and the tallest in Israel, should have had the guts, especially as a king, to go and challenge Goliath on behalf of Israel, but he couldn't. He was afraid. In contrast, what you see is a little boy, David. Again, the estimated age, about 12, 13, 14, 15. Okay? So, Hunter, how old are you? 13, right? David, see? You should learn how to sling a rock. You know? People, shepherds in Israel still do that, apparently. It's like a 2,000-year-old practice. It's amazing. I saw it on TV. It's amazing things you learn on TV. And they actually like made them do like tests. Like they put them like 50 yards away, and then they put a bench with like soda cans and stuff. And they're like, let's see if you can hit this. And the dude's like, and he gets it. It's like, what the heck? Okay. So anyway, don't mess with Israeli shepherds because they're crazy. They're deadly. Okay. But I'm saying, Hunter, your prayers, powerful. Don't ever think, oh, I'm too young. Don't ever think, oh, I'm the baby of the youth group, so I can never do anything. No, no, no. You could do a lot of damage. Okay? David was your age when he killed Goliath. Right? I'm not saying you got to go pick a fight with some big dude. I'm just saying. All right? Anyway, God's rejection of Saul. So Saul is going down while David is rising up. Okay? Why is that such a big deal? It's simply this. Saul, again, Saul represents us. In our most human, in our most vulnerable and most honestly selfish times. What am I talking about? It's this. Saul is a king of man. Okay? Saul is all about self-reliance. He's all about self-help. I will get myself... I will make myself stronger. I will make myself better. I will make myself whatever. Okay? And as we go through the life of David, we see pictures of Saul, and he goes from bad to worse. Okay? Like there's a part where Saul, he's supposed to wait for Samuel to come, because Samuel's the best, Okay? But Saul says, oh no, he's too late. What the heck? So he gets mad. And what does he do? He does something he's not supposed to do. Okay? Like he starts, so he's bad now, he starts getting worse. He starts disobeying direct orders from God. That's pretty bad. If God says, Hunter, from now on, every time you come to church, you have to wear a yellow shirt. That's pretty easy, right? That's a pretty simple thing, okay? Get a yellow shirt. If you don't have one at home, just go and buy one, okay? But imagine you're like, no, God, screw you, man. I'm going to just wear whatever I want. That's bad, okay? And it's kind of like what Saul does. He starts, you know, God tells him to do something specific, and Saul says, no, I think my idea is better. So Saul, again, is a representative of, in my view, a guy who does all the right things, or even a good church goer, but he totally misses God. Saul is a lot like those guys that we studied in John, at least for the boys, right? I heard even Nathan and Jay, right? You guys said, like Nicodemus, you guys like, he has Jesus in front of him, he has God in front of him. How does he miss it? Saul is the exact same book. He's God right there, and he totally misses it. Okay? And so Saul is all about himself. Okay? So if Saul had his own t-shirt making company, it would say, me, myself, and I all the time. Okay? Whereas David is portrayed or described in the Bible by God as a man after his own heart. That's a good title to have. It's one thing for Colin to be like, come in here and be like, I'm Colin, I'm the best. Okay? I'm the best sister, I'm the best daughter. Okay? It's another thing for Colin to walk in here, don't say anything, but Young's like, hey, this is my sister, she's the best. Okay? It's a whole other thing. So that's the same thing as David. David, it's not like David walks around and is like, hey, I love God. God loves me. It's all good. Right? No. David doesn't say anything. And then God says, he is a man after my own heart. Right? And so you see, again, the contrast between David and Saul. And one interesting thing is, it seems kind of gay. I'm going to admit. It seems kind of gay because it says in verse, let's see. In verse 4, Jonathan takes off his clothes and gives it to David. At first, you're like, that's pretty gay. Like, if I saw Jay doing that to any of the other guys, I'd be like, what's going on? It better be some weird retreat game or something, right? But what's going on? It's simply, it's this. Notice who Jonathan is. Jonathan is a prince of Israel. He's the son of Saul. Okay? And so what is he wearing? Just imagine princely thing. Okay? Like, if I was a prince, I would be like, I'm the prince. Like, all of my shirts would have something like that. Or have a big picture of my crown or something, right? And so that's what Jonathan would have. Picture it, if you will, please, with me. Okay? And so when Jonathan gives his clothes to David, it's a physical symbol of, again, the decline of Saul and the increase or the growth of David. Okay? And this is actually the second example. The first example is, remember in the David and Goliath narrative, what armor does David try on? Saul's. So if David wore that armor, anybody in Israel would have seen it and been like, hey, that's the king's armor. Right? And so we already see, again, Saul is unknowingly, okay, giving up and showing, okay, and God, through even stupid people like Saul, is showing, okay, Saul is not the one, it's David. Okay? Part 3. Christ has bound himself to us in love. Okay, so we're going to tie everything together. It's simply this. In this passage, David and Jonathan both represent Christ, and we the other one. So Jesus represents, for example, if David represents Jesus, we are Jonathan. And if Jesus is Jonathan, then we're David. Okay. The first one we already talked about is simply that that just as Jonathan, or just as David, the beloved, the chosen one, the pre-Christ figure, also needed a friend. Right? We can't. Okay? The same way, we also need friends. A healthy Christian, one pastor said, always has several relationships going on in their lives. Number one, you need a leader, someone to teach you. Number two, you need a friend. And number three, you need someone that you are leading. Okay? And so, even David, the great King David, has Jonathan just come alongside him to encourage him, right? But at the same time, notice this, even if we were to see ourselves as Jonathan, right? We see in David, the pre-Christ figure, the one the Bible describes as a friend who is closer than a brother. Right? And this is an amazing, crazy idea that God defeats his enemies, us, sinners, haters of God. He defeats us by adopting us, cleaning us up, and then he makes us one of his own. That's how God wins. God isn't about destruction. There will be a time for that. But for now, the way he wins over his enemies, namely us, is not by accusation and judgment. Right now is a time for repentance, kindness, mercy. Right? Again, older guys especially, right? Johnny, Elliot, Jay. The way you guys love on your older or younger brothers is not to say, Connor, stop playing games. Okay? It's, Hunter, I love you so much. Stop playing games. Hunter, I love you so much. Okay? By kindness. Right? Because believe it or not, God, in his wisdom or his sense of humor, has decided to use people like us to model and to physically live out his love to others. Okay? And so that means we have to love our fellow brothers, especially fellow Christians, members of our church, the way that God would have us love them, the way that God has loved us. Okay? This is why I always tell the guys, hey, be nice. I'm not just saying that just to say be nice. Be nice because that's how God deals with us. Okay? So Christ has bound himself to us in love. Notice the word that is used in verse, let's see, verse 3. A covenant. Covenant. Jonathan making a covenant of friendship with David. That's a pretty big deal. That's like an official bromance, like, you know, thing. I think modern day, all that we need is now is like, you know, a pizza, and good football game, and root beer, right? And that's an official bromance, you know, ceremony. Jonathan and David went all the way, like they made a covenant. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking like they got the animals, like cut them up and like do all of that stuff, like had paper and sign in, stuff like that, right? All that is just to show this, that covenant, right, is to signify our covenant with Christ. So when we are united to Christ in faith, it's not just as, yeah, Jesus, I love you, yes, you're cool. No, it's an official covenant. The reason why we must follow whatever Jesus says is because there is a covenant, a promise, a relationship. Okay? Just as if you were in a marriage relationship, I'm just going to let you know, this is not a big secret. In a marriage relationship, you're not supposed to sleep around with other people. Might be a surprise to you in modern day. Okay? You're not supposed to be checking out other people. That's a bad thing. Okay? So you can't tell me, hey, in a love relationship, you can't have rules. That's stupid. Of course there are rules. Okay? Or something more familiar to you guys. In a relationship with your parents, it's a love relationship. But it doesn't mean that you can disrespect them. It just doesn't work that way. Because they brought you into this world, and they can take you out. At least that's what my parents told me. Okay? So it's a love relationship. And then number four, the last point, God will reject our claims to our own kingdom. And this is in connection with the second point, the decline of Saul. We have to be very careful, very, very careful. 1 Peter chapter 5. Be humble. Humble yourself, therefore, beneath God's hand. Because he will lift you up. Okay? Now, what does that mean? Saul didn't care about God or his hand. Saul cared about himself. And so what did he do? He said, screw God and his timing. I'm going to make myself big. I'm going to raise myself up. And what you need to do is when you see, read that passage, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6 and 7. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you at the proper time. Okay? What you need to see is this. The hand of God is swinging. And if we dare ever to stand up before God in pride, he will smack you. And as my dad says, you do not want to be smacked by God. Because he's very strong. And it's very painful. Did you know that even as a Christian, God can oppose you? One of the reasons why some of us, our Christian lives suck, and we're not growing, is because we are standing up to God and saying, you know what, God, I don't need you. Or I don't like your ways. I don't like, you know what, my opinion is bigger, if not better, than what you have already said. Therefore, I don't need you. That is a prime example in the modern church of us standing up against God. And so, many people, especially even in this church, many of you guys have come to me, told me about your spiritual life and how you want to grow, but it seems like you're stuck. I wonder. Okay? Again, I'm not talking down at you because I make the same mistakes many times with you. But I am talking to you as someone who have made these mistakes and who will continue to make these mistakes. But someone who is pleading with you, humble yourself now. Do not dare stand up before God because God will oppose you. Christ only must be our king. We dare not set up our own kingdoms. That was Saul's biggest sin. It was not the disobedience, although they were bad. It was not him trying to kill David, although that was bad. It's mainly that in his heart, he built up his kingdom. He said, God, I'm going to build my own kingdom, and it's going to be bigger and better and badder than yours. And he dared set himself up against God and his kingdom. And before we say, oh, Saul, you bad boy, gotta be careful, because that's what we do. I do that every day. I do that every week. I do the things that naturally is all about me. Me, myself, and I. Whatever makes me look good, whatever makes me feel good, whatever is yummy to my tummy. That's it. That's all it is. Bottom line. And I never think about, hey, is this honoring to God? And so in conclusion, two things. Two things. Number one, where are you in your friendship with Christ? The Bible makes it very clear. You are either on God's side, he is your friend, he is your king, or you are his enemy. That's it. Nothing in between. There is no purgatory, there is no middle ground. It's either A or B. Number two, this is specifically for the Christians. Where are you in your Christian life? Are you growing or are you stagnant? If you're stagnant, why? This is the reason why the Christians need to read the Bible. The Bible serves as a very powerful mirror. It shows us exactly where our heart is. A lot of times we don't like that. But that is the design of God. So let's go before him now in prayer.